Blog Talk Radio.
All right, Steve, you did a little instant composition for the Soul Train Gang and myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's hear it.
Put your hands together, clap soft.
Halloween is almost upon us, folks. October 22nd, another, 8 or 9 days. Folks, this is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, barely getting on air on time. And I'm sure the captain knows what I'm talking about. I'll explain later on. Folks, the call-in number, as always, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. The water is always percolating, so don't be fearful of calling in with your protestations, your questions, your statements, your comments. Not a big deal. Let's go to a quick groove. We have a lot to unpack. We have about 90 minutes of show this time. Let's go back to a few months ago. Afropunk, D'Angelo, She's Always in My Hair. His rendition. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Yeah.
never mind sunshine, turns rain. Whatever my hopes and dreams, turning in the wrong direction. She's always there. Tell me how the she is.
Yeah. song.
Wow.
Every day I was singing along.
Must go on. Again, this is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Captain, the time is yours. You need it on the bridge, the holodeck, and the ready room. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, on this show, we will be tuning in to the expletive black frequency, the expletive black frequency. So be prepared to get emotional, ups and downs, highs and lows. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yes, folks, again, this is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. What I wanted to begin with in our conversation, in our colloquium, the Williams sisters, legendary pro athletes, by far the greatest female, I shouldn't even say female, greatest tennis players the world has ever known to date. I would have to even include perhaps Arthur Ashe, Althea Gibson. Those were, of course, legendary, stupendous athletes. But the Williams sisters, as it goes, may be unprecedented as far as what they've been able to accomplish, along with the help of their patriarch. So anyway, I have great pride for the Williams sisters for the most part, although they've done some, they've made some missteps here and there. But what happened, it's no fault of their own. We have a Russian tennis official who likens the Williams sisters to brothers. I think he made a comment about them being the Williams brothers, and that they're difficult to look at, and they're manly and that kind of thing. Now I'm going to give, as I always do, a moderate synopsis or a moderate analysis, and I'll tell you what the deal is. First of all, they're not there to be beauty queens. They're not. This is all about sour grapes, because these sisters are winning, not unlike Charlie Sheen from a few years back, winning, and it affects people. And God forbid that they be black and winning. I'll be the first to say that. Now, some folks think that because I take a more conservative bent, the captain is more analytical and on the independent side, that we have a tendency to go in with heavy analysis. And that's just the way we do things. We have to be able to deconstruct, my favorite word, and I think shouting out David Carroll, you have to be able to deconstruct arguments. And I'm not comfortable in looking at something one particular way and not being able to invert the argument and come out similarly. You have to be able to give and to get a little in an argument. But if you look at this constructively, analytically. It's about the performance. They are there not to be beauty queens. They're there for athletic purposes only. And beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Now you're probably saying, well, how is it moderate? Well, it's moderate because I don't particularly find the Williams sisters attractive. Particularly. I go back and forth with them. It's whatever day I might see them, and it's okay, she looks kind of okay today, whatever. We have to admit that they may not be everybody's cup of tea, but that doesn't mean they deserve to be insulted, and someone should have confronted, well, he was suspended, ultimately, but he should have been confronted and said, hey, man, you're a sore loser. This is not a beauty contest. If it were a beauty contest, you got to go somewhere else with that. So I would really critique where he's coming from. But I say, now this is where I go moderate, black folks have to start to be honest if we are going to start talking about qualifying beauty or quantifying beauty, that we have a standard. We do have a standard. I remember, I think we received an email about this, and one of our stalwart listeners had said that they were talking about our women, that our women aren't, they don't find our women attractive. No, being honest, they said the Williams sisters. The Williams sisters should not translate tribally to all women. And that's where we mess up, I feel. All of a sudden, because the Williams sisters are attacked, that's an attack against all womanhood, all black womanhood, I should say, specifically. That's not the case. We have plenty of fine black women of different hues, shapes, sizes. But somebody has to be not attractive or not baseline attractive in our community. Let's just keep it 100. Not everybody's going to get into that group. Now, I think sometimes when I see them jazzed up, they look fine. But if we're going to be honest, they do have a mannish look. And let's not get into being phony, because when they first hit the scene, we weren't comfortable with them. We really were not. But they were able to up the ante in the glamour department, and of course they're able to up the ante as far as their athletic prowess, which is what it is about. But we have to have a separate conversation, Captain. A separate conversation about not everybody is going to be on the black attractive train. There are some people women I find are very attractive that for some reason they're not given the props. But I do think there's a baseline attractive, irrespective of hue, because, you know, there's that also going on in our community. You know, if someone's too dark, someone's too light, whatever. I don't go there. But I think white folks have made it clear about what they perceive to be attractive. That's their thing. We need to be clear about what we perceive to be attractive also and stop being phony. Some of these heavy tones that the captain knows I talk about, some of them, honestly, facially have the potential. They do. I see a lot of attractive black women, black and brown women, who could be more attractive. But being honest, some, if we're going to be tribal, some of us do things to jeopardize or to sabotage, or as William Shatner says, sabotage our beauty, our motivation, our ability to move forward. We know that. We have men in our community, young men, the pants are sagging. I'm not going to go all into that. That's later on when we deal with Hannibal Buress. We have to get into him also later on, the comedian Hannibal Buress. But we don't want to be honest about anything. Everybody passes. Everybody Everybody passes. Everybody's beautiful. Someone's 280 pounds and 5'2". You're beautiful. Knock it off. But that official should have been suspended if not fired, because you know what? You are not winning, and that is the core argument. Can they compete? I got to go back to black achievement. Can you compete? Can you compete? Can you compete? Damn what you look like. The Williams sisters obviously can compete. That's it. Captain, your thoughts?
Well, we have to understand it goes back to what I've said before. Life is one big flat circle, channeling True Detective. How are decisions made? Decisions are made in the limbic system. They're done emotionally. The Williams sisters are beating the mess out of everybody. So emotionally, within your true mind, some would say your brain, okay, you really probably don't like black people. You have a thing against black people, and they're just totally destroying you. So being that decisions are made emotionally, your emotions got the best of you, and you said the wrong thing at the wrong time. That was supposed to just remain in your head. That's what it was supposed to do. But that's what happens when you get emotional. You lose control of what happens consciously. And essentially, that's what happened here. So there you have it. It's not so much whether or not they like us or they don't like us. They don't have to like us. That's fine. You focus on the work. And that's what the Williams sisters are doing. From the work perspective, it is on and popping, my friend. That's it. You cannot vivisect or dissect that, the work. You just handle the work. Don't worry. You don't have to like me. You don't have to tell me I'm attractive. You don't have to tell me I'm beautiful. Somebody else is. That's normally how it works. Look at all those heavy tones that get men. Someone's into them, into their pants. So that's what it is at the end of the day. That's the reality of it. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah. You know, I agree with you. I just, my thing is that, you know, and I've received emails on this, and I've also seen comments, and all of a sudden I'm just curious as to how one person being critiqued becomes black women. The Williams sisters and their and whoever, you know, listen, inappropriately so, this gentleman, in quotes, was incorrect. He was foul, certainly. But the reaction on the part of many in the quote-unquote black, alleged black community. Our women are under attack. No, the Williams sisters are under attack. Because you know full and well, Captain, there are some fine women of color in our community that, you know, do not get the credit for their beauty. Do not get the credit for their beauty. But there is a difference between, let's say, Kerry Washington or Zoe Saldana, or I could go through a whole. Cause I don't have a preference when it comes to.
Barry, Sergio Mim's favorite.
Yeah, well, phenotype. I find a lot of women attractive, but we can't just throw everybody in the punch now, you know. Monique's attractive too, the heavyset actress.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, you know who's it? You know where I saw this the most? What's her name? You know what I'm thinking of, Captain, from the movie from a few years ago.
What's the movie?
Jeez. The one, Precious.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. I mean, my opinion is when Hollywood comes, well, you have people that are going to tell us she's fine.
Well, they could tell you, say all they want. All right. I said it right here. Email me up. You know where to find me. You have the call in number 646-915-9620. She wasn't attractive.
Gabourey Sidibe. You know, I remember, I think we discussed this story maybe a year ago, maybe less than a year ago. I think it was the University of Alabama where they, I believe it was one of the southern colleges, southern white college, and they finally had a campus college queen, and she was of color.
Yeah, heavy tone.
And yes. Now, they had all these slim vanilla shakes prior to quote unquote us, again being tribal. We get some sloppy tone, and everybody has to ride the wave and say, you know, the equivalency wasn't there. It really shows you what they think of you. There was a secret message in that. We do have attractive, very attractive women in the black community. So there are those, you know, that, I mean, listen, I think if you look at old school photographs of black folk, and I go into this, and the Oracle and I talk about this incessantly, you take a real good look at black people circa 1930, 1940, up to 19, I'd say damn near 1970. I feel we were on point. Not that the obesity wasn't there like it is today. It wasn't accepted. This level of mediocrity wasn't acceptable. When our women embraced their natural selves during the Black Power movement, you're talking about some glamour, man. Now we have the Nicki Minajs with their buttholes hanging out and shaking to a groove, getting 300 million hits. You know, a Hottentot Venus circa 2014. This is going on. And we have to be honest about it. There's a type of distortion that's going on that I'm not comfortable with. We could really do this the right way as a community, if there is such a thing. We could really do it the right way. And yet there's an embracing of mediocrity, a type of phoniness that we've deemed to be acceptable, Captain, that I'm not comfortable with. And this is, you know, I'm pretty much done. I saw someone in the chat room said that my prejudice is showing, something to that effect. It might have been our friend Bison. D-Bert, you are throwing your prejudices out there. I'm telling you, I don't believe in mediocrity. And I also said that I thought that these young women are performing exceptionally on the tennis court, and that's what they're there for. They're not there. Like, what's the other, Maria Konnikova, who can't play a lick? She can't play a lick, and all they do is talk about how good she is.
Sharapova. Yeah. They like the way she looks, though. That's why she's gained a lot of accolades. They like her look.
Who was the one that was dating or is still dating Julio Iglesias Jr. or whatever?
That was the one there with Mayweather when she was towering over Mayweather. You remember that?
No, but I'm talking about the one that's the blonde that's dating Iglesias, the singer.
No, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that situation.
Very well known.
Talk about Sharapova.
But I mean, you know, come on. You've got to be able to play. I mean, what happened to Enrique Iglesias? I'm trying to figure out who he dated. I'm looking right now. I have to get Anna Kournikova.
Okay.
Yeah, Anna Kournikova was someone that the mainstream media will put out there as attractive. Now, that's another thing too. Mainstream media will put out who they deem to be attractive. They will make the decree. And their decree, half the time, I don't agree with. You just have to be blonde and white and thin, and you good to go. You're good to go. Half of them wouldn't get a pass from me. Maybe more than half. You know, but my taste. So everyone has different tastes. This is true. But I think we don't seem to have. We don't seem to be. We seem to be a little bit dishonest. We need to have. Maybe we should have a decree also. How come the black folks don't have a decree where everybody's in? You know, Gabby Sidibe is on the same level as Dwayne Wade's Gabby. They're the same person. Come on, man. Really? That's it. I have to be honest. All right, folks, let's move things along. Enough with the Williams sisters. I wish them the best. I didn't care for the Crip walk that one of the sisters did in London, and we spoke about that as well. You know, that there's some things here and there that they do that, you know, pease me off a little bit. But for the most part, I'm not really troubled by them. Anyway, let's get into Hannibal Buress. Hannibal Buress is a up-and-coming comedian. I think I might have mentioned him here and there. I actually like Hannibal for his type of humor. He's got this real deadpan, droll sense of humor. He was in Neighbors this summer, the movie with what's Seth's last name? I'm losing my memory. There's so many Seths. Captain. Not Seth Green. Anyway. I'm stuck on this Seth guy. why can't I think of his name? Okay, anyway, the bottom line is that he had a recent performance about Dr. Cosby. And he's throwing shade on Dr. Cosby. And it's there's no bones to be made that the blog and this show owes a great deal of gratitude for Dr. Cosby for speaking out more than 10 years ago now at the NAACP 50th anniversary of Bound vs. Board of Topeka, that gala in 2004. And he went off script. He had a blackout moment. And he spoke about some of the observations that he made with some of our dysfunctionalism. And he did it at a place where I suspect people were not comfortable with him doing it there. But it really was the place to do it because you're talking about the 50th anniversary of the Board of Kansas case, the famed case that Thurgood Marshall won. And you know, that case really was the seed that was planted for the civil rights movement. So all those gains, the suffering, all the pressure, all the work that came from that case and the civil rights movement thereafter, in his estimation, he felt that we were regressing as a community. That some of us were taking massive dumps on those accomplishments, and he had to say something about it. So when he did it, it was a breath of fresh air for some in the black community, or let's say many. Many in the black community felt like this is how they felt, and thank God somebody spoke out loud. Someone said something. But then you had a faction of folks, intellectuals included. Dr. Michael Eric Dyson came out with a book quicker than Barry Allen can write his name. All these folks came out to deal with Cosby. Cosby somewhat has been ostracized ever since that 2004 appearance. So for some reason, Hannibal Buress comes out. We're talking about now 10 years post that incident, and says that Dr. Cosby is a rapist or an alleged rapist, and why should we listen to him? You know, he's got this condescending attitude. I mean, he's kind of revisiting. He's revisiting what was said 10 years ago, and he also threw out there that, you know, he shouldn't tell black people to pull their pants up, like all that dysfunctionalism that everybody else has to ignore, that's not contributing to any sense of success, Captain. I mean, it's not working. See, I wouldn't say anything if the dysfunctionalism was working. It's not, the pants sagging is not working for you. So when someone says, hey, that's not working, we seem not to like it. So I don't know what, you know, listen, I like Burris' type of humor. I think he's a talent, but now we're revisiting old news, these allegations. I don't know the truth of them. I know they've never gone to trial. I think one or two might have been settled out. Nothing, for there to be so many of these cases, one of them would have had to stick. I don't care how big you are. And they came about just at the time when Cosby came out to say these things. That also seems to be, this man has had a 50 plus year career. But the moment he starts to critique black folks and it makes a national news, when he's starting to ask for black correction, all of a sudden these things came out. So I remember at the time, I said, this is a little too coincidental for me. So I want the captain to bring his own unique analysis on this. But I'm still going to stick with both these gentlemen. But I have to lay in on Hannibal because I thought that what he said, It's connected. It's not like he just dealt with the allegations. The allegations are tied to his critique. See, that's the part that's a little problematic. Deal with what he did allegedly. If you're going to go there, deal with what he did or was alleged to have done. But no, you don't like what he said, so you have to connect it to something to dismiss him. I want the captain to weigh in, and I got something else to deconstruct with this same issue that I have to give credit to David Carroll on. David Carroll pointed out something that's very integral to critiquing Dr. Cosby if you're going to do that. See, again, I learned something from everybody. I learned something for everybody. I'm not afraid to say, hey, wait a minute. I like that argument. That argument has some weight to it. And again, the term deconstruction, that's what you have to do. You have to be able to deconstruct arguments. You can't just make a statement, let that statement float out there, and not be able to defend it. And there's a number of us, Captain, cross-racially, because I don't like to talk about race all the time, cross-racially, this culture is very much into defending the indefensible. We do that as a culture now. We defend the indefensible as routine. Except here at Afro Nerd, we don't do that. I am not going to defend the indefensible. Captain, give me your thoughts, and I have a part two.
Well, the modus operandi of powerful men, a lot of times, is that they have miscreant behavior towards women. We've seen this with Bill Clinton. In Mr. Cosby's situation, it is alleged. We know this to be true based on the modus operandi a lot of times, not all the time, that powerful men have. We can go down a long list. So I just mentioned, of course, we're talking about Bill Cosby. I mentioned Bill Clinton. There's been others over through history. It's not the case all the time, but a lot of times this is the case when you really start to dig up and start to look at what these individuals are doing. Now, the next thing, what you want to do with the individual, you want to judge a body of work. That's what you want to do. You want to judge a body of work. And remember, this is alleged at this given point. You want to judge a body of work. And if you're judging the body of work of Mr. Cosby, it's very good. It's actually better than this comedian at this given point and juncture at time. Now, That being said, you have to understand something else. When you're dealing with emotional rhetoric that is true, like what Bill Cosby did in his speech, what happens when someone hurts you emotionally? What happens when someone makes you look in the mirror and you see the truth? It's very painful and you look to strike back. A lot of black people are looking still to strike back at Cosby because essentially what Cosby was saying, yeah, we know about slavery. Yeah, we know about this. We know about the liberal programs and everything else where you were allowed to get all of these programs and everything else. But what are you doing? Why can't you straighten up? Why don't you have the intestinal fortitude and intelligence? Put the two together. You need both, not just intestinal fortitude. You have to have the intelligence. You have to have both together. One without the other, you don't really make it. Why don't you have that? Why can't you stand up? Why can't you do this for yourself, do for self? Remember, Farrakhan had said do for self. Essentially, that's what Bill Cosby was channeling at that given time. A lot of this falls on us as black people. Black people didn't like that. So now in this given time, juncture in time, you still have individuals striking back. And as AfroNerd said, the dysfunctional behavior is not working. Doesn't work. We have a long history. It's not like we've been doing this for 5 years and we say, well, maybe we can give it another 15 and maybe it'll all hash out. We have a long history. We can look straight from the 70s. To now, and we could say it doesn't work, has not been working. And it's up to you as an individual to have the intestinal fortitude and have the intelligence to straighten up. You don't like that. You want to tune into victimization culture, and you want to put the onus on somebody else for the things that you have to do. Need I say more? Back over to you, Sir AfroNerd.
Yeah, and you know, there's a part two to this. That I think the listening audience might, I'm intrigued on how someone can get away or discount this argument, but I tell you what I want to do first. Let's go to a groove. let's go to a groove, urban alternative groove, and when I get back, I'm going to give you a part two, and then we'll move forward again. But I want to give you, I'm going to mention a couple of things, actually, attached to this, to Hannibal Buress's argument. Something that we do for Cosby, but do not do with other leaders. And that is the rub. Maybe we could go there with Cosby, Dr. Cosby, his alleged inappropriate behavior, if we applied it across the board. If we applied it across the board, then maybe you could go there with Dr. Cosby. But we don't do it with him. I'll be more detailed after the break. This is the latest by David Bowie, actually. David Bowie has an album, The Next Day. The Next Day, that's the name of the album. This particular cut is called Love Is Lost. Love Is Lost, giving you the best of urban alternative groove. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. great David Bowie, Love Is Lost, Love Is Lost, for the next day, double CD actually, give you the very best of urban alternative groove. People forget that David Bowie appeared on Soul Train many years ago, so he's always been somewhat of an avant-garde, you know, the thin white Duke has always kind of tapped into a lot of different genres musically, and I believe he even worked with Luther Vandross. I have a cut with Luther Vandross on vocals with David Bowie. So David Bowie has he's always been kind of a person that's blurred the lines when it comes to, well, we know he's has an androgynous edge or had one. But I dig that cut. Love Is Lost. Right before the break, I was talking about this deal with Hannibal Buress, the comedian Hannibal Buress, and his critique of Dr. Cosby. And I was channeling Mr. Carroll on YouTube, and he said some things that had me to go even deeper into the reasoning why many in the black community have a problem with Dr. Cosby, and they need to find something to discredit him. Even with what he is alleged to have done, it is heinous if he did do this. Although, we're talking about 12 or 13 cases that just disappeared. So anyway, the deal is those who are critical of Dr. Cosby, and that's many in the black community that have a problem with confronting this dysfunctional thing, this ratchet culture or lower tier culture that is literally killing us, and literally putting us in a regressive state. We're not moving. Some will say we're not moving forward. We're moving backward. You don't like what he says, so therefore you got to find something. Michael Jackson, you love this man, as far as the community is concerned. Internally, the black community love Michael Jackson, but he wasn't offending your sensibilities the way Dr. Cosby is. So you will give Michael Jackson a pass. You will give your ministers in the community a pass. Reverend Eddie Long, it appears highly likely that he was molesting his male church members, young male church members. I should even add that on there. And he's still allowed to preach. That's a thing. Even certain politicians, we've seen that. And as the captain referenced, we saw William Jefferson Clinton get a pass in the black community for his behavior. Even Reverend Jackson to a certain degree. It took a long time to get to the point where some do not really care for Reverend Jackson. But he still has a place in the black community, still. But he's not offending your sensibilities. He makes you feel good. Dr. Cosby lays it on, and he doesn't make you feel good.
Can you make me feel good? Can you make me feel good?
I just need to know.
The year was 2002. The place, Hollywood. My dream was to make it on the silver screen. My first audition was for the lead in a little movie called Monsters Ball. Make me feel good. Make me feel good.
That's what's going on, Captain. That's what's going on. Dr. Cosby is laying it out bare, and he's been doing it. And Hannibal Buress, he can say what he wants. Cosby has been going to this. It's one thing to talk about it on high, from some mountaintop somewhere. He didn't do that. You have to give credit where credit is due. He went into the quote-unquote hoods nationally and spoke to some of these folks, and many of them, upon confrontation, appreciated what Dr. Cosby said. So if you're going to give a pass to some of your dysfunctional rappers for their aberrant behavior, you're going to give a pass for many of your ministers and pastors that are molesting your men and women congregants, like Michael Jackson, or your politicians like Bill Clinton and others. The only thing that makes it different for Dr. Cosby is Dr. Cosby saying things that make you feel uncomfortable that you cannot, quote unquote, deconstruct, so you have to get him. You don't like what he says. He doesn't make you feel good. If he made you feel good, if he stayed in his lane, you would have said it's okay. You would have said, because the reality is, none of these cases went to trial. We know that people of a high status are always being put in a position of being victimized by hanger-ons. We see that. 13 cases, 13, and nobody felt like they needed to stick it out. 13. I mean, we're not talking about a politician. We know he's a powerful man, but it's the difference between a powerful, moneyed white male and a powerful black male. There is a difference. I mean, Oprah can be brought down. I can't say for some moneyed white female. I can't speak for that. That's it. Captain, what are your thoughts on that portion of it? The fact that we'll move on, but that there does seem to be some disingenuousness with those who do not critique other folks of note for their quote unquote behavior, but we really don't like Cosby. But everybody else gets a pass. How does it actually work? I'm confused.
Well, as I said before, Cosby touched them emotionally and they didn't like it. You know, the black people community didn't like it. All right? Black community, for most part, is tuned into victimization culture. So you have a problem with it and what he said, because it makes you look in the mirror. And, you know, people do not critique people all across the board because of the mere fact that it's how your decisions are done. It's done emotionally. All right? Whatever makes you feel good, you like that guy. You like that person. You give him a pass. That's how it works. If you're responsible for people who get hired and fired, and a person walks into your job, you're thinking about hiring the person, and the next person next to them has the same qualifications, but the person to your college, and you say to that person, do they still do this? Yeah, they still do this and such and such day and everything. Who's the person that you hire? You just made an emotional decision. That's how we work. That's how we operate as humans. So that's ultimately what's going on. That's it. Cosby tagged them emotionally, and it hurt them. And that's what it is. So they're still reaching out. Back over to you, Sir Afton.
Yeah, you know, I just wish we would admit it, Captain. That's my only issue. I just wish we would admit it. We're not comfortable with this. And, you know, Eddie Long diddled young male congregants. That's okay though. You know, he still made the parishioners feel good about themselves, verified. And we've seen a whole bunch of ministers that have come back after they've been allowed to actually come back and preach, Captain, after doing some really funky, heinous things, quantifiably. So it's not as questionable. See, with Cosby, we have to question this stuff. We're not really sure. There's cases where we're pretty sure that you did these things, and they're allowed to come back in without really too much criticism. I mean, there are cases that I've been hearing that are so out of this world as far as the lack of respect that these leaders in the community have been able to, you know, stealing from people, stealing, lying, cheating, molesting, killing, and it's all good because they did something, at least as far as their their general demeanor or their performance made you feel good, so you give it a pass. Michael Jackson could really moonwalk and dance very, very well, and he made you feel good about that. The fact that he might have molested a number of boys, we seem not to want to wrap our heads around that. So we on some level, give that a pass. Dr. Cosby tells you you need to do X, Y, and Z because you do need to do these things. Whether he says it or not, whether Dr. Cosby says these things or not, you do need to do these things to move forward. But I don't like that he said it, so we got to get on him. Wow. Wow. That's it. I can't say any more on that. 30 minutes remaining, Captain, so we still have quite a few topics to get into. Let's lighten the load a little bit. This is going to be a topic that the Uncanny Daryl B will probably be all over this Saturday. By the way, this Saturday will be a split show. We've been doing these mixtape mashup shows for quite some time. Normally, it's kind of a one-shot deal per month. But at times, because the audience digs what Daryl B brings to the operation beyond just the comic shop stuff. But this coming Saturday, we're expecting Mr. Talib Starks, who wrote a book, Niggers versus Blacks, if I'm not mistaken, that's the actual title. And I heard him on Adam Carolla's show, and he was rather insightful, rather provocative. I'm pretty sure there's a fair share of folks that are not going to be able to handle. They're not going to be able to handle. Yeah, it's called The Uncivil War. The Uncivil War, Blacks versus Niggers, not Niggas, as if there's a difference. Available at Amazon. But we're going to have this gentleman on, and he's going to go in deep about ratchet slash lower tier culture. That it
sounds
is
crazy.
Indeed a. Oh no, it's crazy. I mean, you know, listen, we've been on this thing practically since this show's inception. Shouting out other Starks, the other Mr. Starks, aka Iron Man. He's the one that coined the phrase lower tier. And we've been riding with it ever since. This gentleman, his book is entirely devoted to the concept, just as there is an Appalachian / white trash PWT culture, quote-unquote cracker culture, just as that is a real cultural phenomenon, cultural standard, we have to hold the weight for people of color, that there's an equal standard that's out here, that's actively promoted, that we, because of tribalism, we like to say we're all brothers and sisters, we're all the same. That's not really the case. So when Mr. Starks comes on this Saturday at 7 p.m., he's going to go in deep about the book and about how he came to these conclusions. And he's a rough dude, Talib Starks. So he's coming up this Saturday, 7 p.m. But at 6, of course, the comic shop, pop culture, comic book, fantasy, sci-fi, video gaming fair. And the news that has just come out is the late, great Dwayne McDuffie's intellectual property, Static Shock, has gotten the green light for a live-action interpretation. Now, the only drawback, if you want to perceive it as a drawback, is that it's not live-action as far as the big screen, but it's for a new imprint, actually. I have the story at AfroNerd.com, so I would advise our listenership, as AfroNerd.com grows, we're still building it up, but it's still working, still there. There's a story that goes in deep about this whole imprint. But it's called Blue Ribbon Content. Blue Ribbon Content, and it's under the Warner Brothers Digital Division. So there's a new Warner Brothers Digital Division, And there's quite a few properties under that division, and one of them is Static Shock, and also president of entertainment at BET, Reginald Hudlin, of the Hudlin Brothers, he's going to be helming that project. Now, I know he's certainly an Afro nerd. I actually met him, I believe, like the second New York Comic Con. It was him and Nelson George together, and they were just walking around. When you could walk around. It's so funny, now that I think about it, that's the last time I remember being able to actually walk around comfortably at a New York Comic Con. Those days are gone. But he's helming this. So there's a lot to take in. I'm actually quite happy that this is going down. But what the deal is now is you need that structural component to talk about it. Because there's Urban Radio. I'm going to forestall like talking about specific people, but people know who probably I'm talking about. But I'm going to get away from that. I'm not going to name names. I'm just going to say Urban Media. The current state of Urban Media does not allow for this diversification of black entertainment to be discussed. There should be somewhere that Reginald Hudlin can go, black media-wise, to talk about a black superhero. You know, there's Afro Nerd, though. That exists. So I'll reach out to Mr. Hudlin. I will try my best to get him on the show so he can discuss this. We didn't always get along, actually. And that was talked about many shows ago, that when he was president of BET, you could figure that out. I thought he was excusing a lot of the nonsense on BET. And you know what? He had to, because they were cutting him a check. And you could see this. You can see this with the Boondocks. Aaron Magruder, who was his boy. Magruder did a caricature of Reginald Hudlin. And really, many of the heavyweights at BET. Deborah Lee was also poked fun at. I think it's probably on YouTube. I wouldn't doubt it. There's this infamous clip that I don't think was actually aired properly also because of it rubbed the shoulders of some of the bigwigs in Hollywood. I don't think it actually aired on Adult Swim. I think it was only available on DVD, if I'm not mistaken. But it hit the internet regardless. Everything hits the internet. So it did hit the internet. But, yeah, you can certainly see it. So, Definitely. But I'm very excited about this project, and I just hope that as far as the graphics and the CGI that will be required for this thing to go down. I mean, I guess it as interesting as Arrow, it's done the right way. I mean, I don't know what kind of that's another thing. I don't know what kind of money they're going to put behind this thing for it to be done the right way. You know, there has to be some CGI involved in this. What are your thoughts about this, Captain? Dwayne McDuffie, who we also were fortunate enough to interview. You can go to the archives and listen to that interview. That was maybe a year before he passed.
The only problem that I have is the problem that I can't change, that no one can change. He's not here to see it through. Then we know there's nothing to talk about at that point. There wouldn't be anything to talk about. He's going to go in there and he's going to bang it because that's what he does. This here, you know, I don't know. I just have to wait and see. Just have to wait and see. It's good. You know, I'm optimistic. We'll just have to wait and see. You know, we just have to wait and see. That's all.
All right. Another story. I want the captain to weigh in first. I'll just kind of mention a quick thing about it. You know, I sent you the story about this young man that was reportedly sodomized at Rikers Island. Rikers Island is a prison in the New York City area. And he was sodomized with a baton, again, purportedly sodomized. Not unlike, I guess, like Abner Louima a decade ago or more ago. The gentleman is Bishmi Ayers, Dish Me airs, 25. And I'm going to read this briefly from the Daily News. I'll mention a couple of things, and then I want the captain to take lead, because I'm probably going to make people feel uncomfortable. Not unlike that baton that was shoved up this gentleman's rectum. Uncomfortable. So, but I have to be honest about how I feel about these things. Anyway, according to the Daily News, exclusive, former Rikers inmate to sue after allegedly beaten, sodomized by correction officer while handcuffed to hospital bed. Dishme Ayers, 25, said he was sexually assaulted by a vengeful officer July 4th at Jacoby Hospital after having an epileptic seizure. Ayers suspects the guard came after him in revenge for a 2008 incident in which he complained about jailhouse conditions. A former Rikers Island inmate who says the correction officer viciously beat and sodomized him with a nightstick as he lay shackled to a Bronx hospital bed is planning to sue the city, the Daily News has learned. I'm going to make you my bitch, the correction officer allegedly said to Bishme, Ayers, 25, before sexually assaulting him July 4th at Jacoby Hospital. Ayers, who was in the hospital because of an epileptic seizure, says the correction officer who violated him appeared to have been drinking. He starts punching me. My right arm was handcuffed to the railing, so he got a white sheet and tied my left arm to my right arm, so my arm was across my face. Then he started beating me up with a baton on my lower body, my legs. Then all of a sudden, he shoved something in my rectum, Ayers recounted. Somebody to help me. He leaves the room, and still I'm screaming, the former inmate said. All right. I'll just say a couple of things here. This young gentleman, again, he's only 25. He's a recidivist. He's been to Rikers before. I believe he served 3 years before this incident for some kind of assault. This is the key component here, something else that he says. He says that he's seeing a therapist, and he says, this is in his own words, I tried not to think about it. It freaks me out. I feel like my manhood was violated. I didn't think that go to that extreme in a city hospital. I'm going to say my piece after the captain. You're probably not going to like it. Not that I would wish harm on anyone. I mean, let's say that's pretty close. I would not wish harm on anyone. I wouldn't wish it. I'll leave it at that. Captain, what are your thoughts about him suing and this treatment that happened in prison?
All right, this is a skinny on prison. First off, Rikers Island, you're supposed to be able to spend maximum up to a year in Rikers Island. Then they ship you off to the big house. Hence the terminology that you hear on some of these rap records. I'm upstate. I got shipped upstate. I went to Canada and these different places. You know, those are the big houses. Rikers Island is not considered a big house. You're only supposed to stay there maximum up to a year. Then they have to ship you to somewhere else. So now, is the next skinny on prison. If you catch a felony, the way the system works is this. That means you're not going to get a state job. You're not going to get a federal job. You're not going to be able to get a city job. And we know city, state, and federal jobs with just a high school diploma, some of them, not all of them, you can manage with overtime to earn up to six-figure salaries. So you're out of that loop. So let's forget that because you caught the felony. Let's keep moving now. Private industry is not going to hire you with a felony. With a misdemeanor, yes, you could do some work and you navigate around it, you'll be able to get a job. Now, what used to be the case, they used to have these programs for criminals. As long as they weren't murderers, they can get into the construction unions and everything else. And with construction unions, you can earn a very good salary. If you have no skills, you could be a laborer, make $27, $28, $29, $30 an hour. You learn some skills, you can make $42, $44, $45 an hour as an electrician. They cut out most of these programs. So once you catch, because they like to use the term catching a case, a felony, you have to have tremendous intestinal fortitude and intelligence to work around the system, because job is not going to be you, not any job that way you could support yourself. So you're going to have a good family structure around you. Now, here's the problem. What you need to be able to weed out before this even happens. Now, according to statistics, what causes these problems while you end up with a felony? We're not talking about the occasional guy that was in a bar, he got into a fist fight with somebody, and then he punched a guy, defended himself, and the guy hits his head on the ground, and then they hit you with a murder charge, and you end up in prison. We're not talking about that. Why do these guys end up in prison? Now, let's look at it. Out of wedlock birth rate, that's prime. Poverty that they're coming from, that's prime. Lack of education. A lot of these guys don't have at least a high school diploma. And they come from single-parent households, and they're from a poverty situation. So this is what leads to the situation where you catch the felony. So before these individuals even go in, the situation has to be corrected. We have to be able to wormhole back 25, 30 years in time, because their body is essentially what destroyed them. Once you catch that felony, you're pretty much screwed up. You're pretty much screwed up. So unless you have a strong family behind you and you have intestinal fortitude, you're not going to be really working really that well. So this needs to be avoided at all costs. That's the reality of the situation. Now, this is why individuals keep going back to prison, because some of these individuals definitely do try. But if you are out in the street making $1,000 a week, $1,500 a week, maybe even $3,000 a week, hustling what you are doing, and then you're saying, okay, I got caught up, let me try to go get a job. They hit you with a felony. You're done. So you have to be intelligent enough. You have to be in a situation where that is not an option for you from go. Now, the problem is when you're in a poverty situation, when you don't have at least a high school diploma, when you're coming from a single-parent household, remember, how does the human mind-brain interface work? You follow the least path of resistance. We follow the flow of electricity. You know, electricity follows the least path of resistance. So least path of resistance is what you know in these neighborhoods. So hence the environment and also your genes, where you're coming from, because you're coming from the single-parent household, essentially messes you up. So this is why these individuals are going to keep going back and back and back and back and back and back to jail. There's really, it's a loop. And a lot of you listening right now, if you caught that felony, right, that job that you have, goodbye. And that's the reality of it. And then you may start around that cycle. But the difference with you, a lot of you listening, you're probably coming from the two-parent household, and you're experienced already, and maybe you could figure it out. These individuals are not going to figure out, not most of them anyway. So essentially that's what's happening at this given time and place. Back over to you, Seraphim Nerd.
Yeah, you tapped into something, Captain, as I would expect you to have done, about the backgrounds for many of these young men and women. But we're talking about men in this case. But I have a hard time eliciting sympathy for this young man when you start to hear that this is a repeat thing. You know, you're not even really hearing about a drug business as to why he went to Rikers. That might have been in the background somewhere, but he did 3 years for assaulting someone. You assault someone, you know, karma, quote unquote, is a bitch, isn't it? Sorry for the expletive, but that's what it is. That's the saying. I wouldn't want. I mean, that's a horrible thing, but you know what? I kind of know. Well, listen, you beat up somebody to the point we do 3 years for that. Then you go back again, Captain. It's the recidivism that makes it. I have a hard time understanding this. Even Ice-T, the rap artist and actor, who has, I don't think he's really done any real jail. He's one of those guys that when you talk to him, when he hears interviews, he's very slick about it. I think actually someone told him, listen, you have a shot to really do something. Don't be an idiot. Ride this wave. So someone pulled him to the side, because he also came from this environment. Both his parents died, raised by relatives from New Jersey originally, then goes to the West Coast, hooks up with gangs and pimps. So he was in this environment. But when he got an opportunity, someone told him, listen, you keep on doing this, you're going to mess up your situation. And he actually listened. And he made some reference to his cognitive abilities in an interview. He said, well, I'm a little smarter than some of these guys. That I did my dirt, but I also knew when to navigate, how to navigate, and to take advantage. I mean, there's another story, I don't know if we have enough time, where a gentleman who was impoverished, homeless, won the lotto, captain, not a big lotto, but enough not to be broke. But he ends up being broke in 4 weeks. He won, I think, $500,000 that it could have been set up for him to have $500 a week for life. $500 a week for life. But he blew that in 4 weeks. So now he's back to being broke. When you hear these stories, it's like, okay, wait a minute. You are under certain circumstances. You beg and plead for things to get better. They do get better. Now you're back to square one. So this is when the conservatives and the Republicans say, wait a minute, even when some of these folks get the opportunity, it's that learned helplessness victimization model that we talk about. So even when people, you know, they beg and plead, we need the government, we need money, we need help, we need opportunity, what happens if you get these things? You buy $200 sneakers. You don't have a savings account. You go to the check cashing place. I mean, $500 a week, Captain, for life. And now in 4 weeks, you are dead broke. You're not going to get sympathy from me. I can't do it. And this gentleman, I mean, it's highly likely. Listen, he's lucky. I told the Oracle about this story. I know what I said to the Oracle. I said, he's lucky it was a baton that was placed in his buttocks. Could have been something else placed in there that he wouldn't have liked. Not that either one, but if there's a choice, he could have had a human baton in there. So, I mean, my thought process, Captain, is prison is a horrible place. And what got me, because he's going to therapy, what about the therapy to keep you from being a recidivist and keeping you behind out of prison? Literally, oh, yeah. You're behind out of prison now. Keep
that's
your
big.
Behind out of prison. Now, first of all, that's the chief component, one of many components that prevents yours truly from ever going down that path. I don't want my behind in prison. For that very reason, what happened to that gentleman? Who doesn't know this? But I want to tell you, I want to take what he says in his own words that really bothers me. He says, Mr. Ayers, I try not to think about it. It freaks me out. This is the reason why he needs therapy. I try not to think about it. It freaks me out. I feel like my manhood was violated. Your manhood was violated when you were brought into prison in the first place. The fact that you have no freedom of movement, someone tells you what to do every waking minute that you're in there, is your manhood being stripped. But you didn't realize that until someone sticks a baton up your rectum. I would have realized that just by virtue of having my freedom stolen from me. See, folks, these arguments, you know, I hope he's got a suit. Hopefully he will win this thing. But will he react the same way that the other gentleman with the lotto react? Suppose he gets a $1 million settlement. Where literally you get, you know, who knows what kind of money this guy. He could get $250,000 to a couple of million. Set up an annuity, you do not have to work ever again. if someone gives you $3.5 million settlement, and you take an annuity, if you're intelligent, you will never have to work again. You're not wealthy, but you're certainly comfortable. That might be, what, $2,000 a week, Captain, for life.
Probably a little bit more, a little bit more. Going a little bit more.
That's enough to be solidly middle class in New York. And you can still figure something else out for feces and giggles if you're intelligent. Now, I wish he's getting therapy, but what I don't know is, does a person like this ever come across straight talk? Because you're going in, see, after all of this, this young man might still end up in prison another 2 or 3 years after he gets a settlement. Still. That lack of cognition is a mother. And I just can't handle it. I don't understand that. I will confess I'm very fortunate. I mean, just, I know the captain, you know, we all are very fortunate. We live a certain charmed life. You know, I'm not a wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, I took a young lady out a few days ago. We were hanging out, late model car. We see movies. The captain and myself, we do a little podcast. We do. I'm having some shoes made. You sound rich right now. Really? Really?
It's just the way just the way you did it. It's not so much what you were doing, it's the way it came off your tongue. You're just comfortable, team hurt.
I gotta mention this, Captain. I got something else I didn't mention to the audience. I was actually stopped by the cops a few days ago. I didn't tell you this.
Okay.
But guess what? Guess what? The guy told me to roll my window down. Hey, man, you got a nice car. Where'd you get those rims from? Had a conversation. The cop pulled, just pulled to the side, and I didn't have any, I knew he wasn't going to, first of all, I got the car washed, so I know my car looked solid. And he just rolled up and said, yo, man, I got a similar car, but where'd you get those rims? And that was that. That's my experience with Popo. And it was like a nothing situation. But if I was another type of Negro, Captain, I could have said, What? The alarms could have gone off, and then he could have said, oh, wait a minute, okay, we got to go into this now. This guy said, hey, man, I just want to holler at you. You know, your car is nice, man. You know, what type of car is this? What, I got a similar car, but your rims are different. You know, just brother to brother, so to speak. Popo. That's me. I mean, I'm just not going through the stress that a lot of Negroes are alleged to be about. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. That poor man that got shot up, and I know he's got a settlement. He's got to get $5 or $10 million, maybe more, who was shot, and he was really in the right. But that's a rarity. You know, he didn't give any resistance. And that cop went straight to jail. Captain, he went straight to jail.
Yep.
No one was to talk about. I mean, what happened was foul, but there was no murkiness about it. It was what it was. Eric Garner, God rest his soul, from Staten Island, had been arrested before his death times between 13 and 40. I mean, you know, and he said his dying words were, I'm not going to do it. What did he say exactly, Kathy? He said, enough is enough. This is it. And it was.
Yep.
This stops now, I believe he said. This stops now. And the poor man died. Doesn't mean the cops are right. We have to start to look at these matters a little bit differently. It can't always be we're victims. The folks at Ferguson are going to be upset, Captain. They're going to be upset because it's looking like there might have been some kind of accosting going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to believe that 10 minutes before Mr. Brown was shot, he was roughhousing and threatening a store owner. But I'm supposed to believe that he is a kind, cherubic gentleman, that he couldn't mix it up with someone. I'm just saying. Folks, seconds remaining. Check us out 6 p.m. Saturday to leave Starks on Uncanny Daryl B. We have a lot to unpack. It's been real. This is Disclosure Latch featuring Sam Smith. See you on Saturday, 6 p.m.